Okay, welcome back. Welcome back to Immunize Wisely with your host, Ingrid Castle. Our guest is Pat Shannon of the INI-world-report.org. I encourage you to bookmark that page. And he's like an amazing writer from 30 years at least, isn't it? About 30 years, Pat?
40, actually.
Oh, my gosh, 40. Yeah, we're really dating ourselves. We're no young spring chickens anymore, huh? So anyway, but we can have a good spring chicken attitude, right? So one of the things you brought up in your excellent article on FBI corruption, it's really nothing new, is the involvement of the FBI and all these bombings that were blamed on white supremacy and the KKK, and how, I mean, it's like if there was any revival of the KKK in our lifetimes, it was the FBI creating a bogeyman and actually creating these things for, you know, for funding of the ADL or funding of the Southern Poverty Law Center. You know, it creates all this sympathy for their agenda, you know. So you want to, you know, when did you, I knew about some of it, but it seems like you, it's like every single one of them is involved with them inciting it and blaming it on the KKK.
Yes, the bigger cases for sure. Well, it goes back to Martin Luther King Jr. and he was concerned that there was no FBI office in Jackson, Mississippi, the state capital at that time. Mm-hmm. And he was urging Kennedy and then later Johnson to get that done. And the historical case was the murder of the three civil rights workers. And that was in June the 21st of 64. Mm-hmm. And the that, of course, made big headlines. But they could not convict these people of murder because they couldn't find a jury in Mississippi that would convict them. And so there was no federal criminal charges that could be brought against them, but they could bring the civil rights, the violation of the civil rights. So in 1967, the feds came after these guys, and there was a handful of so-called Klansmen that mm-hmm. they brought to trial. Well, some of these guys, like the deputy sheriff that turned him loose and then went back after him. I don't want to take up too much time with the details on this case, but the big important parts were that they were convicted and some served 3, 4, 5 years in federal prison back in the late 60s and early 70s. Well, come 2005, the feds figured out a way to get a new trial and bring people to the bar of justice. And so I went to Philadelphia, American Free Press, Philadelphia, Mississippi, and where the trials were, and covered that. And I noticed some more strange things similar to what you and I talked about in the Call trial going on. Uh-huh. But so happens that the preacher who was the KKK organizer at the time, his name was Edgar Killen. What a name, huh?
Well, yeah.
So Preacher Killen was the number one guy that they were trying for murder, and he had an attorney from Jackson, Mississippi, who was a close friend of mine for 20 years, and for whom I had done some independent private eye work over the years. And here he's 45 miles away in Jackson, and so am I. So as fate had it, I had a front row seat to the whole trial, both during the sessions and otherwise, because I rode with James McIntyre from Jackson to Philadelphia and back every day of trial. So uh-huh. I had a front row seat with the defense attorney and uh-huh. learned some interesting things from him. For instance, the early days of the trial, the defense attorneys for the old group back in the 60s, they had gotten together and were had sessions on what we're going to do tomorrow, and you know, because there was a half a dozen or more attorneys there, and for the many clients, and probably more like 10, as I remember. But the one day, James tells me they're going into the hearing, and they're filing this motion to do this, that, and the other, and the prosecuting attorney already has his answer in hand. And so 30 seconds behind the defense filing this motion, the prosecution files his answer because they had a plant in there to begin with. They knew exactly what was going to be filed the next morning. That's wow. The corruption in the Department of Justice. Well, come 2005, when they're trying Edgar Killen, and I hear I've got the defense attorney is my chauffeur to go to and from the trial each way, an hour and a half each way. Well, they could not bring forward some of the defendants from the 60s because they had deceased. But mm-hmm. They did allow them to bring transcripts of what their testimony had been on the blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And one of to show you the power and the strength of the Ku Klux Klan in Mississippi in 1964, one of those defendants from the 60s, whose transcript they read at the trial, said that he had joined the Klan in March of 1964. Don't forget the civil rights murders were in June of 64, 3 months later. He had joined in March, and his KKK official number was 0004. He was the fourth member. That's how big and powerful the Klan was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it was nothing until it was souped up as a big publicity stunt and to, you know, really minimize the, you know, well, you already know right now, leading up to what we see today, you know, the reverse racism kind of thing where everything is blamed on whitey. You know, they want to deflect all anyone from looking at the Khazarian mafia, the Jews, the bankers. So that's like the big thing. You know, I have a book called Whiteness, the Original Sin. It's just incredible. You know, the games these people play to keep us constantly divided. And that is what they're doing, you know, today, moving forward. But they did that way back then. They created this whole fear of alleged white supremacy. And they had all kinds of plans. You know, they had the skinheads. We've seen it here in North Idaho repeatedly, where we would have our gatherings actually interrupted by some people found out about it, and they would be invaded. So it had that taint of white supremacy and Klansmen kind of stuff, you know, Aryan nations, you know, it was constant. always to paint that picture. But yeah, so they were actually involved in these bombings. There were how many bombings? Like 39, they could totally link 39 of 40 bombings they could link totally to the FBI that you
were... false flags for sure. The touchstone, the trigger situation of the civil rights movement in the 60s actually happened in 1955 with the whistling, the black kid named Emmett Till from Chicago whistles at a mm-hmm. white woman.
Right.
And the husband is out of town on the road, comes back home, and he and his half-brother, that was J.W. Milam, did the shooting, and they ended up beating a little 14-year-old Emmett Till to death and finally shot him. But the recipient of the wolf whistle was Carolyn Bryant. Her name was Carolyn Holloway when she finished high school in 1951 in my hometown and lived next door to old Pat Shannon. Would you believe? She was the recipient of the wolf whistle was my next door neighbor. Her, mm-hmm. As a kid, and in 1951, I'm in like the fourth grade, her younger brother, Jimmy, was my playmate, so we all always got in trouble together. But that, we lived at the second house on Percy Street, and she lived in the family, Holloway family lived on the corner. And across the next street to the next corner was the home of my piano teacher and her husband, and that was the residence where the Citizens Council was established in 1954. So here, I live next door to the recipient of the Wolf Whistle, and the next door down is the founding home of the Citizens Council. Now, what you mentioned earlier about the fake news, the leftist press one began to call it the White Citizens Council. It was never the White Citizens Council. They stuck that on there.
Oh, yeah.
It was the Citizens Council, and it wasn't made up of a bunch of redneck Klansmen who were out haters and out to kill. It was
right.
Made up actually of very prominent business people, farmers and businessmen in the town. And the I have a picture of the that appeared in my hometown paper of the founders, and the last guy that was there, he just died at 90, age 99, was a close friend of mine, deacon in my church, and so. But he, both my dad and he, told me over the years, many years afterwards, when I was a journalist and inquiring and asking questions, but they both told me that they never knew anybody. Here we are in the heart of the Mississippi Delta, cotton country and farming country. They never knew anybody that was a member of the Ku Klux Klan.
Wow. Isn't that some admission, huh?
Yeah.
Wow.
So that's why I got such a big kick out of publishing the story of my friend Judge Dillard, Chet Dillard. As I mentioned in the article, there are people will be interested to know that he, and 30 years earlier, he and I were friends, and I did PI work for him in the 90s, but in the 60s, he was the district attorney of Jones County, commonly and locally known as the Free State of Jones. Do you know where the Free State of Jones came from? Are you familiar with that title?
No, I'm not, actually.
Jones County, Mississippi, was in 1861, when Mississippi resigned from the Federal Union, Jones County in Mississippi, one of 82, Jones County resigned from Mississippi. They said, we're not going to be in the war of any on either side. And it became the Free State of Jones. And to this day, the sheriff's department, the deputy sheriffs that drive around in their white vehicles, it doesn't say Jones County Deputy Sheriff. It says the Free State of Jones.
Mm-hmm. Wow. The Free State of
Jones. Yeah, Judge Dillard was the district attorney in the Free State of Jones. And facetiously called that, of course, but nevertheless, they made it official. But he told me some outrageous stories of the FBI, and he's the one, I quoted him in the article, that he said, Pat, there were more members of the FBI and FBI informants that were in the Klan around here rather than Klansmen. And they actually, they kidnapped one guy that they were suspected of being in the Klan, and I think he probably was. He was one of the few. And they took him out of Mississippi into Alabama. That's a federal offense, by mm-hmm. the way, across the state line, mm-hmm. and they locked him up in a motel, and they, I don't know how, if they beat him or how viciously, but they kept him captive for a couple of days, and they couldn't get him. They're trying to get him to give them names of other members, and mm-hmm. he didn't crack, and so the FBI a couple of days later went to his home, to his wife, and said, John's been kidnapped. We think the other Klansmen have kidnapped him, and so we want you to know, want you to give us their names so we can maybe go find your husband for you.
And she obviously didn't have him, right?
No, she didn't know any of them either. But here's the district attorney of Jones County telling me these stories. He's so aware of who the real enemy is.
Right. This is a district attorney, and this is just the kind of, you know, crap that they stoop. They stoop so low. They've played every trick in the book. It's like they are, you know, the fox, and I mean, you know, they're fox in sheep's clothing or whatever, you know. But they are dirty, dirty. Oh, horrible. And we've heard that more. You know, like the whole Gretchen Whitmire alleged kidnapping, you know, the plot to kidnap. I mean, they're prosecuting these people that really did never want to do it. And, you know, they were just some ne'er-do-wells that didn't like Gretchen Whitmire. A lot of people didn't like her. And so these paid agents come and basically create a whole narrative to justify their existence. And they're all off now. That actually went to court, and they were all exonerated because it was so clear that it was the FBI yet again doing their dirty tricks.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the worst atrocities and one of the biggest blown up in the leftist press was the murder of the church bombing in Birmingham with the four little black girls that died.
Oh, yeah. That was horrible. What year was that?
That was, let's see, six.
About.
That was, I'm trying to think. Let me see. I got to put together my head here. I believe that was 63.
Oh, really? So it was right then. Okay. Back then. Okay.
Yeah. And
that triggered the whole civil rights movement, basically.
Right. It was a big trigger. And as I mentioned in the article, the 30 years later, on his deathbed, I was able to get to know and become friendly with several interviews with the retired U.S. Deputy Marshal Dan Moore from Birmingham. And Dan was he was the assistant. Let's see, he was the chief U.S. Deputy Marshal in Birmingham, and the federal building was in the courthouse downtown. And he gets a call on Sunday morning, early, like 6 a.m. He's awakened by the ATF guy in Washington, D.C., and the ATF, I guess, had contacted the marshals, and his boss in D.C. wakes him up and says, you need to get down and secure the federal building, so secure the courthouse. And Dan says, it's 6 a.m. What's happening? He said, well, we're expecting some kind of harassment or some attacks on the building sometime next week. And Dan says, okay, he says to himself, sometime next week. I'm not getting out of my bed now to run down there and do that.
Wow.
And I asked him, I said, what does it mean by to secure the building? He said, just to install a guard on each floor and secure the windows and doors and be sure everything is locked up and have a guard on duty there.
Right.
And so he went ahead, he had breakfast with his wife, and I don't know, an hour, two, three later, he went downtown and began to do his job as ordered. And at a few minutes after 10, he hears the explosion because the church was not that far away from the downtown area. So when he heard the explosion, it took him about 2 minutes to put two and two together and figure out who had done this. And
gosh,
he later on gave me much more evidence and how they tried to pin it on Klansmen and finally did. But here the FBI itself had done this false flag that murdered the four little black girls and then got it blamed on the Ku Klux Klan to just besmirch their name some more.
Ah, unbelievable.
It was a federal job.
Absolutely. Well, should we open the line to callers? I mean, I bet people have all kinds of stories. Do you want to do that?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I'm always glad to talk to anybody that's interested.
Yeah, so the number is 512-248-8252 if you want to call in and ask a question of Pat. Because, I mean, Pat, you know, he covers a lot of ground. I mean, although we're focusing on this one article he wrote that's great for printing out and sharing with other people, it is actually, not everyone is a subscriber to the Barnes Review, although I highly recommend that you do, because it takes a lot of important topics and distills them into a really well-footnoted articles that are, you know, easy to share. I mean, anyway, he took that proof of his article that was published in the Barnes Review, and I put that link in the chat room at immunizewisely.chatango.com. So you can always go there even later in the week and grab that article and download it. It makes a really nice, 8 pages? One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight. Yep. It's 8 full pages. I did front and back, but and it's worth it. It's really worth it, a page turner. But he has tons of stuff on his website. His books are also page turners, so I'd encourage you to support him. You know, it was actually a group of people that started INI-world-reports.org. And so it is, I'm sorry, it's report, it's singular report. I keep wanting to put an S on it. So it's www.ini-world-report.org. Anyway, the link is also in the chat room. So there's all kinds of other stuff that you've been researching too, Pat. And we've been going back and forth a little bit about, you know, just some of these revelations and speculations about, you know, all these deaths of deep state players and Hollywood actors. And, you know, do we have any proof because we have a captured media? You know, the CMM, as you would call it, the controlled mass media. And so we get all kinds of, you know, stuff through the alt media, but they want to keep it under wraps. So it's like, you know, where do you have the proof? We certainly don't have what people would call credible evidence, especially with so many clones and masks. I mean, you've seen Biden wear a mask, and that's been pointed out by a lot of people. You know, he'll have this mask on, and his shirt opens up a little bit, and you can see the mask over his head, right?
Yep.
So, yeah, and I don't know how, I mean, you've certainly been sleuthing on that, and you're like, the jury's still out. You're not really sure about any of it, right?
Well, yeah, yes, I'm sure about some of it, particularly what you just said. I've seen the evidence of them wearing masks, and the pictures of Biden standing with Obama in 2012 when he was vice president, he has dangling earlobes. We'll take a look at so-called President Biden's earlobes today. They're attached. It's not even the same face.
Right, exactly. Well, we've seen that too with Saddam Hussein, you know. I don't know what happened to the real Saddam Hussein. Maybe he's in hiding somewhere. But the one that they actually captured was like, you know, some bum off the street that had the same or similar eyes to his, but certainly didn't have the chiseled face. His teeth, the whole bone structure of his jaw and teeth were completely different, where, you know, the real Saddam Hussein came from aristocracy, and the other one, you know, was certainly more malnourished and from a poor family, you know, someone that could be, I guess, sacrificed. Who knows? The whole thing is crazy. But we brought a lot of that stuff out in the Idaho Observer, and I know you've brought that out too, just that there's, you know, they want us to believe that one person is another person. And the latest is, you know, there's a new Kevin McCarthy. Have you seen that one?
Yes, I have. I've not seen the pictures, but a friend of mine told me about it. And indeed.
Pictures are very convincing.
Yeah, that's what she said.
I'll have to dig that up for you.
Okay.
Yeah, they're very convincing because I don't always watch. I'm more of a reader. But when you watch, it's kind of a younger version. I mean, either has a clone up there or, you know, because clones, you know, they can get rid of all those age spots and different things like that. But it's definitely a younger version. And they had this clip of Marjorie Taylor Greene, you know, kind of like flirting with him, the younger version. And they had some caption anyway. They made it look like she was actually flirting with him, which we know that she doesn't really like the guy, you know, but, you know, even she, you know, I mean, it was a cute, like, you know, lots of pictures and little comments, you know. Anyway, we do have a call. So we have Chance in West Virginia. Welcome to the show, Chance.
Yes. Hello, Ingrid. Can you hear me?
I absolutely can hear you loud and clear.
Okay, now, sometimes you amaze me, Ingrid. You got one of my favorite authors right there. You know, Ingrid, you got to elope with me and get married. I'm telling you now. I'm really impressed. Mr. Shannon, I spoke to you, it was a while back. I think it was on Rick Adams' show, I believe. Oh, I had a mosey on back into my library and pick up. You wrote one of my favorite books of all time. back in 2010. I was a young whippersnapper then. I was 50. Everything they ever told me was a lie.
Yeah, it is filled with a lot of unknown facts, very well-known cases where the facts were suppressed, as you saw.
Yes, sir. And let me tell you now, Ingrid, if I could read one quote from his book, if I may, you got to sit down and fasten your seatbelt because it's one of the best quotes I ever heard. Would that be okay?
Sure.
Okay, now, let me. I got to put on my reading glasses. At this age, I got one bad peeper. Okay, here we go. And Mr. Chandler will remember this, of course, because he wrote the book. On page 5, here we go. This is a nation of jet-propelled, air-conditioned, beer-swilling, hamburger-eating slaves who are abused, amused, confused, defused, diseased, divided and conquered, as well as aborted, indoctrinated, intimidated, regulated, illuminated, that's A-L-U-M-I-N-A-T-E-D, as in aluminum, alienated, chlorinated, fluoridated, intoxicated, interrogated, incarcerated, hallucinated, vaccinated, mercuriated and decimated. Now, did you ever hear anything that hit the nail on the head like that, Ingrid?
No. He's a very creative writer, and we all love him because he has a Pat, you have a great sense of humor. You know, Pat stayed at our house. You know, I was the first person to blow the whistle on the whole Edgar Steele thing, and I got in trouble for it. I mean, I an email. This is an email. I blasted everyone I knew that there's something really funny going on. I met with Alan Banks, which was his best friend that he was supposed to meet.
I remember.
Yeah, in fact, Alan died just last year.
Now, Pat, I got to ask you.
He stayed at my house. He was doing major investigation of the Edgar Steele case. So we had a great time getting to know each other.
I remember the Edgar Steele affair. It's a shame. Now, Pat, I got to ask you, where the hell you been, brother? I'm at an age now where everybody just went and done died on me, and I've been thinking about folks like you. I was saying, what happened to these folks, man? Because the last time I heard you, Pat, was on, I think I called in Rick Adams. I think it was like 4 or 5 years ago. I can't recall now. I'm getting older now. So, but I'm telling you, Ingrid, this is one of my favorite books of all time. Mr. Shannon is such a prolific author, along with Michael Collins Piper, Donald Jeffries. I mean, you guys are the tops. And I'm so glad you let me call in a little bit early. I just had to tell Mr. Shannon that. Mr. Shannon, I wish you the best, and God bless you now. And thank you, Ingrid. And let me know when you want to get married.
Okay, then. Thank you, Chance.
Please call me. Okay, good night now.
Okay, well, thank you, Chance. I'll have to consider. It's not like I'm throwing it out the window either.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
In times like these, you can't depend on the government to keep you warm and fed, but you can depend on the Vermont Bun Baker to do just that. With the Vermont Bun Baker, you'll never be in a situation where you can't cook, bake, fry, boil water, or heat your home all at the same time. One of the most revolutionary cook stoves, wood stoves ever, the Vermont Bun Baker is available with or without soapstone veneer, a natural stone that retains heat and radiates it back into the room once the fire is out. A beautiful addition to your home, the Vermont Bun Baker has an efficiency rating well above 75% and qualifies for the wood stove tax credit. For more information, watch the Vermont Bun Baker on YouTube and live stream, or visit us at www.vermontwoodstove.com. You can also reach us by calling 1-866-SOAPSTONE. Don't ever be hungry or cold because the power's gone out. With a Vermont Bun Baker, all you have to worry about
is What's for Dinner.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
Support those that support the network. Support Dixie Republic at DixieRepublic.com. Email ProudSouthern123@gmail.com and let them know that RBN sent you.
It's I'll send you a clip of it. It's Deep Breakfast by Ray Lynch. Uh-huh. I love Ray Lynch. What can I say? It makes it upbeat, and it's not a bunch of talking. We're talking enough, right? But we have more. So this is Pat Shannon. I'm reminding everyone, Pat Shannon, you know, the premier investigative reporter of our day, 40 years sleuthing, prolific author of books, and huge fan of his. Chance in West Virginia just called in. You can go to ini-world-report.org, and you can hook up there and get on his mailing list. So anyway, we have Larkin, Texas, welcome to the show. Are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me fine?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah, Pat, it's good to hear your voice again.
Hey, that's Lark, right? L-A-R-K?
Yep.
That's right.
Yeah, I remember you.
Yeah, it's been a few years, but I've thought about you off and on. I visit your website and everything else. Here's a couple things I got for you. I have to tell you that I have learned more about the story of my life, 68 years, of recent, in the last year, or this guy, Michael Gaddy, that's got a show now on RBN. He's a revisionist historian. But here's what I want to direct your attention to. There's still a lot of, let's talk about JFK for just a second. You've got this guy, Mark David Anderson, And then you've got this guy named Miles W. Mathis, both of whom insist that JFK was not actually assassinated. So I want you to weigh in on that, and I can expand upon that if you wish. But I also want to know a simple answer to a simple question. Who owns American Free Press?
I have been away from them for the past decade, so I can't really answer that question with any intelligence. But what you might do is contact Paul Angel, who does the editing now, and ask him that question. I'd like to know the answer myself.
Yeah, I had read that one of those a Jewish attorney actually took ownership of it, you know, a dozen years ago.
Mark Lane, you mean?
Exactly. That's the last I heard about that.
Well, Mark Lane and Willis Cartwright were very, very close friends. I never understood that because from what you just mentioned. But Mark actually won that big case for them back in around 90. And then when I was up there, the year I spent in the office, in the D.C. office, I never met Mark. I did talk to him on the phone when he would call in on occasion. But at that time, I understood that Willis was the big stockholder, the big owner, but there were several others around the nation. But now they know Willis has been gone for, what, I think since 2015. And so I just don't know the answer to your question.
Yeah, there's some strangeness that happened regarding Mike Piper, Willis Cardo, and, of course, Mike always liked Mark Lane, I guess. They were fairly close. But, yeah, so anyway, I still have some remaining questions about that whole time period. Because if you might recall, that's kind of how we first connected, was in reference to the fact that I called into Mike Piper's show one day and I said, when you are talking about nationalist, is that for you a euphemism for socialist? And the reason I say that, because, see, a lot of Americans grew up actually in a quite socialist world, and it still remains so to this day, but there are different flavors of socialism. And that explains so much about what has occurred in American history, even really what happened with the FBI, you know, from its inception. But, you know, we could take it back to the American education system very early, before the Fed in the 20th century. And, you know, there's something you can read on the Internet. It's called the Leipzig Connection. And there's something called the Leipzig School by Dr. Dennis Cuddy that explains so much about what we're seeing today. You know, I mean, Robin Eubank's book, you know, Credential to Destroy, How and Why Education Became a Weapon, because it is. I mean, it's tragic what's happening in the schools. I mean, and now they're coming after the kids with these jabs and, you know, this technology and everything else. And it's, I mean, it's a mess.
One of the great quotes I saw on the internet just this past week, somebody wrote in and to say how big a damn fool parents would have to be today to pay money to send their kids to college.
I think the entire public education system in this country should be abolished. And I sure as hell wouldn't want my child going to either a public school, even a private school, because they all have to teach to the test, which comes, you know, from the feds. And, you know, this university education, too, I think there's a lot of brainwashing that happens in these colleges and universities. But, again, my question regarding JFK, are you familiar with the website MyGodI'mHit.com?
Yes, I've seen it, and I just watched it a second time a week or two ago. I didn't get finished with it. It's awfully long. And the one challenge I have to that whole theory and what we're talking about, listeners, is the fact that Kennedy faked the whole his own assassination and was never killed, and he lived to be 102. And I mean, it's an interesting theory, especially the deeper you get into that 2-hour video, the more believable it becomes. But I've got a challenge for those two authors, if I ever get a chance to talk to them. How do they counter the testimony of a dozen or more Parkland Hospital doctors.
Well, but you might want to check out the interview of McClellan. That's at that website, My God on Hit. And, of course, to find the information regarding JFK perhaps being homosexual, just do a search for Miles W. Mathis and then just put JFK in your search engine. But, you know, a lot of their the information kind of correlates. This guy, Brian David Anderson, apparently just passed away, but that guy lived in Dallas for a long time, where I live. And believe it or not, having lived in this area since 69, it's astonishing the number of people that I've encountered that had some connection to that fateful day in 1963.
Mm-hmm. Well, I found it astounding that anyone would accuse JFK of being homosexual. Now, possibly bisexual, but I'm sure Marilyn Monroe and many others would have a big argument about that.
Yeah, well, you know, as I go through life, you know, all these assumptions that I've, you know, adopted because somebody else told me what the truth was.
Yeah.
Little by little, they just kind of fly by the window. You know, they just, I don't know how else to put it. But, you know, I'm not exactly a spring chicken myself anymore. And when you talk about these, you know, the shenanigans, chicanery of the FBI and all these different groups, the ADL and et cetera in this country, I mean, how far back does it go? And so when you look at the research of Michael Gatti, well, heck, it goes back to before the U.S. Constitution, not just the war between the states, which I have long maintained, and as did Deanna Spingola, that it was a communist revolution, and it was won by the communists. And I've never read that they ever gave up control. I think we've been under martial rule since at least 1860 or 1863. It's mm-hmm. never been rescinded. And that's basically a tenet under international law, the law of necessity. The only thing, anything that permits the free flow of commerce and maintaining the peace is permitted.
Mm-hmm.
And when they talk about maintaining the peace, that means peace on their terms. And so look what the hell is happening today. It's pretty damn, it would be a sad legacy for the boomers to leave this world the way it exists today. That's all I can say.
Oh, absolutely. No, we're going to turn it around. I mean, one way or another, we have a lot more awake people, Lark, and I'm determined. I really feel there's too many synchronicities, too many things that have happened since Don's death that lead me to where we are today. And I think you should really look at Patel Patriots Devolution Series. You know, serious, Patel Patriots Devolution Series. It's really a must read. I mean, even Christiane Northrup is an avid reader of his series, and she feels it too. There's a big shift going on. A big shift, and people are waking up, and we're not going to put up with it anymore.
Hello, you mentioned. Excuse me, you mentioned 1863 has been a significant time. What about the new corporation of 1871? Isn't that what caused a big change?
Well, it actually was. I mean, you know, that was. I suppose that's when we formally became a socialist nation. With the Act of 1871, there's, you know, all you have to do is look at the symbol, the symbolism uh-huh. behind all that. But uh-huh. yeah, I think Michael Gatti sheds a lot to the discussion. You know, he sheds a lot on the discussion, and uh-huh. he's worth a listen. But you know, it'd be nice if some of us older fellows would get together and have conversations from time to time, because I think it would be well worthwhile. And I agree with you, Ingrid, that there are a lot of things afoot, but the fact of the matter is it's this technology that's going to enslave us.
Well, yeah.
More than anything.
Lark, do you still have my private phone number?
No, but get mine from the board op, okay? And,
okay,
let's reconnect.
There is something on a different subject I'd like to talk with you about that doesn't really apply to this on-air conversation, but yeah, I'd like to chat with you.
Yeah, I could actually just. I have you both in my private book, my black book. So I could just do it in email between you guys. Is that if that's okay?
Oh, that would be nice. That would be lovely. Anyway, thank you very much for letting me weigh in. It's really good to hear from you, Pat.
Okay, same here. And I'm gonna give you a holler. Is Sunday afternoon convenient?
Hell, anytime, man. I'm 24/7.
Oh, all right. I'll call you after midnight some night then.
Any old time, man. That's cool.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks.
Thank you, Ingrid.
Thank you. Appreciate it, Lark. Yeah, you know, it's funny. You know, we all age differently, and he's like, Lark's like, 24/7. Yeah, if you want to call after midnight. And I think Pat, Shannon, and I are more into keeping a little bit more normal hours, you know? It's like, you know, I mean, you get to a point where it's like, you know, I'm older now. I'm going to have this much sleep. I'm going to shut everything off at this time. You know, not that we're that road. I mean, I can be flexible, but, you know, I don't know. I'm still working. I'm still doing stuff. And it's like, wow. I 24/7, that's not me. Not anymore. And you're still working a lot, too. You're writing all the time. So anyway, we do have Mike in Kentucky. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Hey, good to talk to you, Pat, Shannon. I had an organization up here in Kentucky brought you to my little hole-in-the-wall TV station that was in Moorhead, Kentucky, back about, I think, 1998 or so. It was Rick Tyler.
Yeah, with Rick Tyler, yeah.
Yeah, or Tagahopper, whatever his name was. I had, you know, that whole organization got kind of infiltrated and busted apart, I think. But for whatever reason, they did accomplish a few things, but I still have a couple of your books that I think you signed for me. I Rode with Tupper, and the thing about the Montana Freeman was really compelling.
Oh, good.
You know, yeah, I like that book a lot.
I wrote that book back in 1996 before the Freeman went to trial, because the Freeman out there in Montana urged me to get it out quickly so the people of Montana could understand the truth. And so I ripped that thing off in about 6 weeks, from July till September, and they were ordering them by the case, and they put them in the truck stops out there in Montana, and they sell them. But amazing to me now that I still get an order or two every week or two, about a couple, two or three orders a month I get for the Montana Freeman. And 25 years later, I'm amazed.
Well, I actually met a guy who took one of their seminar teachings or whatever, and he used one of those, I forget exactly what it was called, certified banker's checks to pay off taxes in Ohio.
Yeah.
And when he went back to renew his tags, nearly a year later on his truck, he had sold a piece of property, had a tax lien on it. They said, well, you've committed fraud on this office. And he said, well, my fraud was as good as your fraud. I've got a copy of the check, and the old guy, he just passed away with a heart condition. I guess he got disenchanted enough with the world that he wouldn't go back and get any kind of medical treatment for it. He knew his time was coming. He could have probably stuck around a while, but I now have the distinction, and I think that TV station was a target, targeted for, you know, various reasons, local or federal. But I now have the distinction of being named in a lawsuit for the world record fine ever issued by the FCC.
Congratulations.
Well, and I have nothing hardly in my name, an old motorcycle and a wrecked Jeep. So they're going to have fun, I think, with the 15% that they might get if I'm forced onto Social Security. But you mentioned earlier working for different law firms. You don't happen to – I've tried to contact everybody from Larry Klayman to William Binney and all across the spectrum that I can get a not hung up on, and I can't find anybody to take our case. They've rejected our appeals for a public defender. So you wouldn't happen to know anybody, would you, that might listen to the story?
No, I don't. Danny, you had a lawyer up there in your group. Did he pass away?
I've lost touch with a lot of those guys. The old paralegal guy that I know is still working, but he's about went blind, you know. And the guy that started the Gatewood Galbraith, you might have been talking about. Yeah, he passed away. Yeah, he especially was running for every office he could run for. He was in our studio too, as well as several other folks. Oftentimes I think people don't get to head up these organizations unless they've got some hitch in their background that can be brought out to take them down. And that happened with the guy I met a couple times that was supposedly the head of the Kentucky State Militia, and turned out he and three buddies had robbed a grocery store in Virginia in 1965 or something before that Gun Control Act. And mm-hmm. There's no ex post facto laws, but they still charged him with a felony, even though it was like $100 worth of groceries split three ways. So wow. He had a felony on his record, and he was the head of the state militia in Kentucky. And I guess a lot of people didn't know about it. That Take Back Kentucky organization hired me to do some videos, and that's how you ended up in our studio. With a Concerned Citizens for Kentucky group, we did a series of shows, and you were one of the interviews. So,
I see.
But we also had Floyd in there with his expose of the Southern Poverty Law Center, Jim Floyd.
Oh yeah.
And of course, Gatewood was in there, Gatewood Galbraith, and several people locally that kind of raised a red flag for a lot of the establishment in our area, and they kept looking and looking for ways to take us down. They finally, I think, got Homeland Security involved. But yeah. It's really good talking to you, man, and you can get my number too if you want, and we could talk further from the board office.
Mike,
I've been a guest.
If I can come up with the name of a renegade lawyer, I'll pass it on to you.
Yeah, well, what I've heard a lot of people do is they get the lawyer to help them type it up, and they file it themselves. I mean, it's like $500 to do that. But then the whole tort reform case situation where the loser has to pay the other's expenses goes away. And, I mean, Electronic Frontier Foundation has blown me off several times. We've had the shadow ban and downrank and stuff like that happen with our phones, and I've heard cell phones all over the country that are turned off, and even cordless phones. The audio is called a hook bypass switch, has interfered with our phone lines since before I was working there in 1997. So all that William Binney stuff and all the whistleblower stuff from Snowden, it's late to the game by 14 years at least. They was doing that before the Patriot Act. All right.
Yep.
Thanks,
I know
thanks
about
for
that
taking
too.
The call.
Thank you, Mike.
Bye.
So thank you, Mike. Alan in Texas, welcome to the show, Alan.
Yeah, good evening, y'all. Hey, I just wanted to get back to Gordon Call a little bit, because during that time period, the early 80s, what was it, 82, 83? I actually lived in Arkansas. My parents lived in Fort Smith, and the only way to get to Fayetteville, Arkansas, was Highway 71 through Mountainburg. I actually got stopped twice in roadblocks when they were looking for Gordon Call. And he was killed right outside Mountainburg. When you're going up Highway 71 north, it's like you turn off right to go up into the White Rock Mountains. Been by where they killed him many times. Long before I was awake and aware of what was going on, they just said they were looking for this, basically, you know, like a violent white supremacist, you know. And I just wanted to call up and say, it's like, no, it's like every time I hear that name, I actually got stopped in roadblocks. They were stopping every car, every truck going up Highway 71 and looking for Gordon Call. Many years later, I found out the truth of what was going on. And I'm like, oh, my God, you know, it's like I actually got stopped in roadblocks when they were looking for him. Been by where they killed him many times going up into the White Rock Mountains.
Well, yeah. I visited there a few years later, and I talked with one of the neighbors who lived in a farmhouse, maybe 100 and I'd say 100, 150 yards away only. And yeah. I went in and interviewed him, and he said that what happened, as they discovered later, is when Gordon was shot, he looked enough alike one of the other farmers in the neighborhood that they thought that they had killed the wrong man. One guy said, oh my gosh, you killed so-and-so. That scared the FBI to death, and this is why they torched the place, because they thought they had killed the wrong man.
To get rid of the evidence, yes, sir. Yuri's still in jail. 40 years later. Doing nothing except for defending themselves. See that every time I hear Gordon call, it sticks in my brain because I actually was part of that before I was awake to what was really going on. But I do remember getting stopped in those roadblocks, and I ran around the Ozark Mountains. Mountain Berg was like my backyard almost. So yeah.
Well, thanks so much for calling, Alan. Just so you know,
thank you guys.
We talked. I know the show's about over. Take care. And Yuri is about your age right now. I mean, that's how he's been in there forever since his 20s. It's really a crime. He's very talented. He's an artist. You can buy his paintings. I believe they have his paintings for sale.
Yuri was born in 59.
Yep. Anyway, yeah, so sad. So sad. So anyway, we have only a few seconds, so Pat, do you have one closing statement you want to make for all the audience?
Just to my old friends like Mike and Alan, who have a couple of my earlier books, go to the website and get some of my later ones.
Well, that would be great. The support, Pat, he certainly earned some support from us. And I know Chance in West Virginia would like to probably get some books. He does not do the internet. Is it okay if I give your phone number to a couple of people that don't have the internet?
Let's see, the
an address so they can mail you a check or something.
Yeah,
that would be good. Then, of course,
it's not very difficult for anybody to get on the internet with either a friend or the local library.
Yeah, well, he's pretty isolated. So anyway, but thank you, Pat. You can pitch him. You can pitch him on all the different books and give him a good deal on the phone, and they can send you a check. So anyway,
No, you tell Chance. I'll be glad to hear from him.
Okay, thank you. Thank you so much. Bye.
All right. Good night, dear lady.
Okay, you take care.
You take care.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.